All right, welcome to Season 3, Episode 33. That's a whole lot of threes. Also known as Episode 105, which is divisible by three, of the Retro Game Club podcast. I am Hugh, and joining me is someone launching his own social media network, Rob.
Yeah, the only rule is you're not allowed to make fun of it, because...
Right.
Because I guess that's a thing.
If How I long do you think that... social media network, my slogan would be extra censorship.
Yeah, yes, you are only allowed to talk about Star Wars, video games, and that's about it.
Yeah, and even then, only very mild opinions on any of them.
You are only allowed to say that they exist.
Yeah, right. You can like say that you like sunshine, perhaps. I'll include that'll be allowed. You'd be like, oh, I stubbed my toe and it was painful. I don't like that sensation. That's acceptable.
That reminds me of my new retro gaming podcast idea. Not new, but one that I thought would be funny, where you just list retro video games. This Metroid, Sonic.
That's it.
Altered Beast. Yeah. That's it. That's all it is.
That's the entire format. Yeah. Someone will object. Someone will definitely object.
So what have you been up to?
What have I been up to? So speaking of podcasts, I took over the Nerd Noise Radio podcast for one episode. So I'll put a link to that in the notes, or Zach will, I suppose. You can listen to a bunch of music. I did a Falcom themed episode because it's something that John from that podcast and I've been talking about doing for a while. So it's like 30 something songs on there.
Wow.
And not a whole lot of talking. I just basically do an intro and an exit. And then it's like a block of like an hour and a half of music.
Very cool.
Yeah. So go check that out, please. And then I've been trying to downsize, you know, my wife and I, we have a kid in college and another kid that'll be in college before we know it. And we're trying to figure out how we're going to like move someplace smaller. Not for financial reasons or anything like that, just because what do I need a 4-bedroom house for with like a yard? But basically I don't want a yard. I want to move someplace where I don't have a yard.
Yeah.
And I would like to, I have hundreds of DVDs. Do you have this problem?
I got rid of all my DVDs a long time ago.
Yeah, I got rid of all my VHS tapes a while ago. That was painful. I mean, for my back, like when I was carrying them to the dumpster.
Yeah.
But DVD, I'm like, I wish there was some sort of standalone device I could just pop a DVD into and it would rip it. I realize that's not legal, but like Alibaba exists. So it seems like a product you could get there, but I poked around and it is not.
Well, you have like a DVD drive, right? For a computer?
Yeah,
or
I
no?
have to like, yeah, but then my computer's like running at like 90% while it's doing that.
Okay.
And I would just like a device, I'd literally pop the DVD in and then I go have coffee or do work or any of the other things I do during the day. And then when it's done, it just ejects the DVD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it could read the name of the movie pretty much, kind of. Like, there's a file name on there, so it could just name it that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I went through an effort recently where I got rid of all my audio CDs, mostly because of Spotify, but I did rip all of them, and that... Oh, man, that was not fun. I did a lot of that over, like, winter break. I had, like, a Christmas to New Year's break, and I probably ripped, like, 200 CDs. And then I thought, I'm never doing this again. This is so boring.
I did that in 2006, and I had two roommates at the time who were also music lovers, so I ripped all their CDs as well and put them all up on eBay. I think right when CDs were kind of at their highest point in resale value.
I put them in a box and sent them to a CD recycling center.
Nice.
I did not bother eBaying those. Anyway, what have you been up to?
Oh, man, let's see. Well, I finished Metroid Dread. Definitely a fantastic game. It's hard to find stuff I don't like about it. If you didn't like Samus Returns, this definitely has a lot of quality of life improvements. And, yeah. And for people who didn't like the parry mechanic from that one, it's still in this one. But if you watch a quick video before you start this, you know, it'll kind of show you how to use it where it's not annoying. After that, I wanted a kind of a long Halloween game, so I chose The Last of Us Part 2 because I love the first one. It's probably in my top 5 to 10 games ever. And Last of Us 2 is pretty good. I'm probably 6 hours into it, I would say. And yeah, it's definitely depressing. It's definitely stressful. This came out the month the pandemic started, and I actually had it pre-ordered. And yeah, no one was ready to play it back then. So I'm finally kind of ready now. And I want to say I'm having fun with it, but you don't really have fun with those kind of games that are stressful.
So do they play like the Uncharted games?
Yes, other than there's not a lot of climbing or anything like that, but there's a lot of it's a sneaky game. You're sneaking around.
Okay.
But I would highly recommend, definitely if you haven't played the first one, definitely play that game. I think it's storytelling at its best. You know, you could put it in easy mode and just plow through it, you know?
Yeah. That's what I did with some of the Uncharted games.
Yeah. And that the movie comes out soon. The Uncharted movie, so that looks pretty good, actually. But okay, I like those kind of movies.
Yeah, I'm always skeptical of video game movies.
I even like the last Tomb Raider movies. Not the Angelina Jolie, but the ones after that. Those were pretty good.
Oh,
and by good, yeah. I mean, you know, it's a sliding scale. I'm talking about good for a video game movie, you know. What else? Oh, man. I mean, we have to mention the Nintendo Online expansion price being $50. I mean...
it's like, I mean, here's the thing. Like, I can buy the Sega Genesis collection for Switch for like $20 or $30 right now. That has all the games that are on the expansion.
Cheaper than that used, yeah.
Yeah. And... sometimes it goes on sale virtually for like $9 if you don't want a physical copy. Mm-hmm. In the N64 games, it's just not that great of a selection. I realize like Ocarina of Time is one of the greatest games of all time. But I have Ocarina of Time. I have
and on two systems. Time, yeah.
For GameCube. I have it for 3DS. I have it for everything. I have two Ocarina of Times. Two different Ocarina of Times for GameCube. So,
yeah,
I can play Ocarina of Time. That's not really a big deal to me to have that on the Switch at this point.
Exactly. I think most people were caught off guard with this. You know, most people thought it'd be like $5 to $10 more or even double, not 150%.
Right. $9.99, I probably would have just done it, but no, I'm definitely not getting this. No chance.
Neither am I. And I would still like a nice Genesis controller and a nice N64 controller for my Switch, but I'm sure 8-Bit Do or somebody makes something pretty close to that. So,
8-Bit Do does not do an N64 controller yet, but I predict they will. But they do Bluetooth Genesis-style controllers that are very, very good.
Yeah. And seriously, that was... the only reason why I would have upgraded is so I could buy the Nintendo Switch, you know, the actual ones that Nintendo makes, so I could play my Nintendo 64 ports that I already own, and also my Genesis ports that I already own in the Genesis collection on my Switch with a real controller. So,
yeah.
Just, oof. I was going to say, and they don't even have a timeline for when they're going to release stuff and what they're going to release, you know. You know, I guess they gave you Animal Crossing DLC, but that's only if you bought and like Animal Crossing. So, I don't know. You know, I have my PlayStations. I will have the Steam Deck. And I have so many unplayed games on Steam because there's so many crazy sales. Oops, I just dropped something. I have my Steam Deck. And they have so many crazy sales. So, I own so many games on it that I'm not going to spend another $50 a year on something. I'm just not.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm not going to be getting that.
But should we move on to some news?
So starting off with the hardware section, there is a update, some news about a system called the Analog Pocket, which I believe is a system that's sold directly to scalpers. And this is about the OS that it will include.
Yeah. So I apparently, now this is really focused on if you own the cartridge. So if you buy the Pocket and you, and I'm assuming they're going to re-release versions of all their other consoles with this new OS as well. Hopefully they just have an upgrade or something, but I don't think they can, because what a lot of people don't realize is the Pocket has two FPGA chips. So one will use be used for the game, and the other one could be used for all this new fun stuff the OS does. But anyway, when you put in a real cartridge, it knows what the cartridge is. You know, you could, you can have artwork for it. Mm-hmm. It'll tell you everything about the game, including any revision that it might be. In the future, it might give you, you know, how much it's worth, you know, like a ballpark. You could, I think you could share your game saves and what you've been playing and stuff like that as well. But the most useful thing about Analog OS is you can save what type of controller and its config for each system. So the Pocket can do TurboGrafx. Oh, can it do TurboGrafx? Well, it could do GB, GBA, and a handful of others. Yeah, I think it could do TurboGrafx, like a Turbo Express. Hmm. Anyway, this thing has a dock as well. You know, it sounds like, why would I have to worry about my controllers if this is, you know, a handheld system? Well, you could just, you know, have 8-bit DOE controllers for it. But this thing just looks really cool. I think it's a great step forward for FPGA emulation. What do you think?
I mean, there's no chance I'm ever going to own one, so I'm kind of tuning it out.
Well, I know Zach pre-ordered one, so maybe we'll get a review from him. Speaking of something else you'll probably never own, a Mega 65.
Yeah, I could own one of these. I actually have the Commodore 64 Repro, but I never use it. And I all the time tell myself I'm going to use it. And then I don't. So I guess, yeah, is this available for a pre-order now? Is that why we're talking about it?
Yes. Yep. And okay. I didn't know what C65 was before today. So okay. Apparently it was a upgraded, like 4 megahertz Commodore 64. I think kind of geared towards more for business. I had a built-in 3.5-inch floppy drive, and I don't think it ever came out, though.
I mean, maybe meant to, like, compete against the PC Junior, something like that. Yeah, I don't believe it did either.
So this is a new one of those, except it's 40 times faster.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the specs here. It is indeed vaporware. Yeah, I'm looking at it here. So it's a 3.5 megahertz CPU. I'm actually not, it's a 65CE02, which must be a upgraded 6502. So I assume compatible with the 64.
Mm-hmm.
And it was canceled in 1991, which I can't remember when the PC Junior came out, but I think that is near the same time frame.
That feels right. Yeah. And what's 40 times 4? So is it 160 megahertz? Is that right?
Seems about right. So I'm not even close by a little bit on that estimate. The PC Junior only existed in 1984
and 1985. Oh, nice. Yeah, a little off there. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what came out in 90? Would that be the PS2 that came out?
Yeah, I guess. Right? 386... was not out yet. Yeah. Weird time for them. I mean, Commodore, it was still, you know, when I started working at a video game store in like 1992 when we still sold Commodore software.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't a big section, but it was still there.
Yeah. So yeah, the PS2 came out in 87 to 95. So yeah, that's still a little early. Huh.
So in other Commodore 64 news, there's an article here. I'm going to link to the osnews.com article, but they linked to something else about how to create a 100 megahertz 6502.
That's awesome.
It's an FPGA, but it means you could then emulate like an Apple or Commodore 64 with a 100 megahertz CPU. So they talk about, Commodore PET, Apple II, I guess any Nintendo also. You could through an FPGA, create an overclocked version that ran at 100 megahertz.
Oh, I love this. That is great.
The dude that's got that Atari ST computer, you know, in Sweden or wherever that was, that would be a big upgrade for him.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Life-changing. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this is really interesting. I know there's Apple II, like new modern Apple II upgrades that you could get, I think, up to like 20 megahertz, but 100 is insane. Now, I don't know what you could do with it. You can't play games with it because there's no clock in these old computers. So it would just run super fast.
It feels like productivity things, right? Like I have this campsite reservation system and now it's blazing fast.
Or maybe like Paint Shop Pro or something.
Yeah, Paint Shop. Yeah, stuff like that. There's like game development studios on C64, running compilers, you know, mm-hmm. building for development. It's probably pretty useful. Uh-huh. This is not a useless project.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty. It is kind of funny though. Something else I've never heard of until this week. The Phantom Console is being auctioned. Did you know what the Phantom Console was?
I remember hearing about it, you know, back in the early zeros. I mean, it had a name that implied it was vaporware. So the fact that it turned out to be vaporware was really not.
Yeah, apparently they had two prototypes and one was smashed on stage. And the other one is this one that's for sale. And I really don't know how much they're going to get for it because you can't do anything with it. So apparently the Phantom's, I guess, niche was... It was like going to be the first console that you just downloaded games to. Didn't have a cart or a CD drive.
Yeah, I think it had a keyboard and stuff too. And it just never, I mean, they did a lot of like hardware prototypes. I don't believe a single game was ever developed for it.
Yes, it looks like they lost a lot of money on it.
Yeah, I suppose you could in theory. I can't even find out what hardware was under the covers on it. So I don't even know what it would take to develop games for this thing. Like if you were some like super insanely rich person, you bought this one console and then just hired people to develop games for you. It's like the guy that bought the only copy of the one Wu-Tang album, right?
Yeah. That is funny. Yeah. Like what would you even do with it? So pretty strange.
Raspberry Pi CM4 can be used in a custom Nintendo Switch Lite replica. I don't believe this is, so when I say Nintendo Switch Lite replica, it means the case looks like a Nintendo Switch Lite. This is not something running Nintendo Switch emulation.
It looks just like it.
Yeah. Now, did you see that Raspberry Pi 4 prices went up this week due to chip shortages?
Sorry. Oh, yeah, I did see that. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. First time ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really affecting everything. So... this might be a little bit more expensive than it used to be, but we had a listener write in a few episodes ago asking what they would recommend for a nice handheld RetroPie system, and this looks pretty good.
Yeah, if you can handle all the DIY work, yes.
Is there a lot of DIY, or is it just does it? It looks like the case comes with everything except for the Pi. So you just plug the Pi in there and you're good to go.
Yeah, I see a battery. Yeah, I don't know how this, I don't know how much assembly is required, I guess.
Yeah.
A lot of these things turn out to be more work than they advertise. I'm just not sure.
Exactly, yeah. And I click on one of the links, but I'm afraid if I look at my Windows 11 computer funny, it'll just crash.
Okay.
So I'm going to not do that.
Let's see, in our last hardware item, FPGA boards add VGA and HDMI interfaces to the original Game Boy, which is totally useful thing you would want.
Yeah. So now you don't have to squint while you're playing Super Mario Land.
Right. Also, the Game Boy adapter accomplishes the same goal.
Yeah. But that wouldn't be nearly as fun as this. No. I mean, this thing looks ridiculous. It looks like a breadboard just popping out of the top of your old crusty Game Boy.
All All right, let's head over to homebrew ROM hacks and emulation stuff. So there is a new Dizzy game for Dreamcast.
Yeah, Intrepid Izzy. It looks pretty good.
Oh, I read that as Intrepid Dizzy. You know, the old Dizzy, like the egg character. This is not Dizzy. I take that back.
Yeah, this looks like Shantae, right?
Yeah, well, much slower. But yes.
Yeah.
The lead character is reminiscent of Shantae, but the gameplay doesn't really look like it otherwise.
Yeah, but pretty cool graphics. It's great to see new Dreamcast games coming out in 2021.
Yeah, looks like pretty. I mean, the artwork seems very Sonic inspired.
Yeah, definitely the same like color palette too, and it's sold out already. So I'm sure there'll be another run of them, or at least somehow to get them.
And then the translation group Geofront. So these are the guys that recently sold their they did translations for some of the newer Falcom games. And NIS America, who has the current license in America to distribute Falcom games, bought all their translations out. They had been doing fan translations. This was one of the games that was not included in the list of fan translations that they bought out. Okay. So they recently released it. And that is the East versus Trails in the Sky for a PSP fan translation. So this game never came out in America. I can understand why they did not pick this one up when they bought the other fan translations, because there's almost zero market for this game. Because it's a PSP only release. Like, it didn't get a Steam release. It didn't get anything else. It's strictly a PSP game. And it's basically the E7 game engine, except you're like fighting characters from different franchises, from like different Falcom franchises.
Yeah, so, I mean, because this was Japanese only, this was not on my radar, and I'd never heard of it, and I watched this video, and now I need this. You're absolutely right. It looks just like the modern East games.
Yeah.
Well, the PSP modern East games.
Yeah, I have this game. I mean, it used to only be like $9.99 to import this game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty playable. I mean, it's kind of like Smash Brothers, except it's only one-on-one players.
Mm-hmm.
Because PSP. So you can like link two PSPs together. However you do that, I've never tried, but there's some way to do it.
As long as it's not through Wi-Fi, because you probably don't have that router anymore that works with it.
Yeah, they say, even in the description, they say you have to do it through WLAN.
Oh, man.
So good luck with that. but it's essentially, you know, it's a one-on-one fighting game with, you know, East and Legend of Heroes characters.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it looks fun. What else? Oh, we got some Doom stuff.
Yeah, Doom running on things. You can now play Doom via Twitter.
So apparently you tweet some directions to this Twitter handle, and then I'll shoot you back a rendered video of what you did in Doom. Some people got pretty good at it.
Yeah. Someone took all the commands from like a E1 M1 speed run, and just with Twitter commands, got through it in 17 seconds, which I assume probably ties the world record for that stage.
Yeah.
Pretty close. And there's source code. If you want to see how this was written, at tweet2doom.github.io.
So awesome. And then Doom now also runs in a series of checkboxes. Now, this is weird. It looks like HTML checkboxes rendered. So, you know, it's just, you know, white and blue. That's the only colors you're going to get. pretty interesting.
And that's also out on GitHub, too.
Yeah. So if you need a different way to play Doom, there you go. I bet pretty soon they'll get Doom to play in... have you seen... what's it called? The Task Manager in Windows hacking, where you could look at all your cores Task Manager. Yeah, they'll probably get Doom running in that soon.
So this Doom running checkboxes is actually in WebAssembly. So it looks like they took, someone had previously ported Doom to run in WebAssembly. And here they are hooking into the render video method in WebAssembly and rendering everything as HTML checkboxes instead of the original graphics.
Oh, that's amazing. I think this next one is my favorite article of the week. Console hackers commandeer Switch games' very fast Sega Saturn emulator.
And so this is under our a new section we added recently called Takedown Letter Pending.
Yes. I figured this was the best place for this article.
And this is basically, we talked a few weeks ago about like Cotton 2 being ported to Switch, and it turns out they did it through the emulation route. So there is a Saturn emulator built into this game. And over on a site called GBA Temp, which is a ROM hacking site or a general hacking site, they figured out how to run other things in that emulator. They can inject any Sega Saturn ROM image into the emulator. Some work really well, others do not.
Yeah, yeah. But a lot of them work. It's pretty funny. So pretty cool. I love when people do that stuff.
And then our wild card section here. Jennifer Lopez launches an 8-bit browser game.
Yeah. So
I don't think she personally coded it.
No, probably not. But her voice is in the game and it's pretty annoying. But not that she's singing or anything. But so this is for a DSW collection. I think DSW is a shoe store. And
Discount Shoe Warehouse, I believe it stands for.
Okay. Well, so she has a line in that short store now. And this is just a endless runner. Well, it ends, but it plays like an endless runner.
Oh, dear. I see. I'm playing it right now. You run in their shoes.
And you get them.
And you grab the big pink boots. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
You can't die because they wouldn't let Jennifer Lopez die, probably.
Well, my complaint, my one complaint about the game, my one big complaint is there's no way to 100% it. There's no way to grab all the shoes. So it's very bad design.
Right now, it's true. Yeah. Because there's some split level stuff there.
Yeah, so it's kind of the same setup as the Paw Patrol game, which I have for my kid, because you can't die and you just run straight and get dog bones, but you can 100% it. So Paw Patrol 1, Jennifer Lopez 0.
Yeah, hold on. There's three levels, apparently. I completed level 1 in the time that we were talking about the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, look at that. You definitely cannot 100% this game.
Yeah, poor, poor design.
Yeah, I mean, this would take me like a year to write, so it's not that bad.
True.
I mean, there's some framework to just produce games like this all day.
Oh, yeah, it probably took someone that does it all the time, like an afternoon.
Yeah. Sega's opening a new arcade center. Usually we're talking about Sega closing arcade centers.
Yeah, it's the first of three, I think. So it's right across the street from their old one they just closed, so... Wish they would have told us this before everyone got so sad. Five stories.
Yeah, I mean, they're anticipating once Japan has a higher vaccination rate that they can open arcades again.
Yeah, yeah.
I can tell you, I had to go pick up something at Home Depot today. And for the first time in 2 years, I noticed the stench of Home Depot hot dogs when I was leaving Home Depot. So... if the Home Depot hot dog stands are officially open again, and they've been closed for a while, I go to Home Depot pretty often. Mm-hmm. I think that means we're getting near the end of this.
Yeah, that's big. That is big news. and this last article is what I posted. My favorite meme site. It's called The Pleasure Dome. And I know it's a goofy name, but it's just for meme stuff. It closed down. And it's on GitHub now, but the site had so many things. It had really good forums, a lot of people helping each other, links to cool tools and stuff like that, and game lists and yada, yada, yada.
Did they say why it went down?
They did not, but from conversations people had with the people that ran the site, they just kind of felt like it was time. You know, I think everyone kind of grew up and have families now, and... you know, memes probably not the most legal thing in the world to be doing, so they probably just didn't want any of that. There was no takedown letters or any drama at all. And that's why I really liked the Pleasure Dome, because that's how it always was. There was never any trolls on the site or anything. And yeah, it's really sad they went down.
Yeah, I mean, archive.org, you can pull down a complete set of MAME ROMs.
Yeah, yeah. So there's other ways to do it, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's about it for news.
That is a lot, yeah. So we want to do some game club discussion?
Sure. Can we do yours first?
Yeah, why not? So Friday the 13th, this was a, you know, a game that I think people generally consider to be bad. I've always kind of liked the game. Like, this was a rental game for me at one point. And I liked it enough after renting it that I had to buy it. Mm-hmm. So clearly I didn't think it was a terrible game at the time. When I think about it, like, I could not design a game that better recreated the Friday the 13th movie experience on the NES.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe you could, but it would be hard. And the idea of, like, you have different counselors that are, you know, trying to protect the kids from Jason and running into him, and you go into the woods and you find Jason's mother's severed head and all that stuff. Like, it all kind of works. And I know, like, the soundtrack is really short, but it's actually very, very fitting. And, like, the whole key to winning the game, like, everyone complains how hard it is. The key is just to never get into one of those first-person fights with Jason. Right? You can win pretty easily if you stick to the side-scrolling fights. And, you know, for this week, I went and watched a speed run. And that's the strategy in the speed run. It's like, you find out what cabin Jason is in. Don't fight him in the cabin. And then when you exit, you'll fight him in the side-scrolling view. And mm-hmm. you'll be able to take a lot of damage off him.
Mm-hmm.
The composer, so I have to mention the soundtrack being really short. The composer for this game worked on Bonk's Adventure. He didn't do the entire soundtrack for Bonk's Adventure, but did some of the tracks. So, you know, it's not a bad game composer by any stretch. And yeah, I really like watching the speedruns for this. I like watching, at this point, I like watching speedruns better than playing the game. I was pretty good at the game back in the day. I'm not so great at it right now. And then I watched some play of the ZX Spectrum C64 version, and it's really different game entirely. The only thing that's kind of similar is that it's a lot of, like, visiting around the campsite and going to different buildings and visiting campers.
Uh-huh.
Like, that part's similar, but the rest of the game isn't really anything like the NES version. Huh. So what about you? What's your impression of Friday the 13th?
Yeah, I am horrible at this game. I only played it for a few minutes this time around, but like you, I watched kind of a walkthrough video and some speedruns, and I think I had more fun watching the speedruns, and that's not a bad thing. I also think, this game was pretty... this game has a much worse rep than it should. If they were to make different Jason game, it just would have been Splatterhouse. Like, I can't think of any other formats for Friday the 13th other than those two, really. Like, you're either Jason and it's Splatterhouse, or you're not and it's this, you know? Yeah, I think I need to spend more time with this one, though. I do remember as a kid renting this and being disappointed, but it seems like one of those games you do appreciate more when you're an adult. Yeah, any other thoughts on that one?
No, that's about it, man. I actually legitimately like the game, and I guess like you, I enjoy the speedruns more than playing it at this point.
Well, I did Devil's Crush. So Devil's Crush is a TurboGrafx-16 pinball game. It's three TVs high, so it has kind of three different... I don't want to say levels. I guess it scrolls up to, you know, different parts of the pinball board. And it's a devil type theme where you have monsters, and it's really what would it remind me of? Definitely like an 80s Satanic Panic kind of thing. You know,
little bit of H.R. Geiger design in there, maybe.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, speaking of which, before this game, they did the developer did Alien Crush, which was another TurboGrafx-16 pinball game. And I think this one hits to me a lot better than Alien Crush. So the point of this game is to get 999,999,900 points, and at that point you have defeated the devil. And you have password saves if you have the Turbo Booster or Duo or CD system. You could do real saves too. It actually took me a long time to know that when I was a kid, because they don't really come out and say that to you. But because you have to hit pause, then you have to hit another button, then you have to hit another button, I think. Anyway, I'm not going to say it's an easy or a hard game. It's a pinball game, but for me, it just plays perfectly. Like, this might be, jeez, I want to say this is my all-time favorite game. It's at least in top three. When I got my TurboGrafx-16, I got it with, well, obviously Keith Courage and this and Bonk's Adventure. And when I got this game, I wasn't that excited for it, but I mean, this is the game that's been with me, I want to say, my whole life. I just keep coming back to it. I've beaten it a few times. The key to this game is if you hit certain parts of the board enough, like the Devil's Mouth will open or a portal will open, and you could get into a bonus round. And if you beat those bonus rounds, like the round might be like, you know, there might be like three monsters and behind them are like these columns and you have to hit, knock down all the columns. They're not really easy. I think the druid one is the easy where you have to get all the druids. Once you do that, you get 2 million points. Well, between 1 and 2 million, depending on which one. And then after, if you beat that one, your ball turns blue for, I think, 2 minutes. And at that point, it's a 2x multiplier on everything. So you really rack up points then. And then also, as you're playing the game, just like in regular pinball, you know, the board likes, the playfield lights keep lighting up, and eventually you have a giant multiplier when you lose one of the balls. And you just amass points, millions of points that way. So an easy way to beat this game is to put in the passcode Devil Satan, and it gets you where you're about 20, 25 minutes away from beating the game. And you have infinite balls, so it doesn't matter how many times you die.
Would this be time to note that the speedrun record on the TurboGrafx is 3 minutes and 19 seconds?
Oh, man, I have to watch that. I wouldn't even know how that's possible.
I watched the Sega Genesis one, which is 33 seconds.
Well, that's a totally different game. Totally different, yeah.
Yeah, it looks, I mean, it's the same game, but it's not the same game.
Yeah, it's a different playfield and everything. I don't like that game nearly as much. This game just, it just feels perfect to me. And I just think it's funny in the directions. You could call the TurboGrafx hotline at 708-860-3648 if you need some tips.
Mm-hmm. Like hit the ball? I mean, like, what are they? Yeah. So 708 is an interesting... 708 used to be like all of the Chicago suburbs at one point. I mean, now 708 is just, I think, south suburbs. But for a long time, that, I mean, the 708 covered in whatever this came out, a game probably came out, what, 1989, something like that. So in 1989, 708 covered a lot of area.
Yeah, yeah. But what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, so I mostly watched videos of this and the Genesis one, and I watched a video comparing this to the Genesis version. And yeah, they are different games for sure. I actually like the way the TurboGrafx one looks better. Like, I realize, like, technically the Genesis has better, you know, hardware capabilities, at least visually, than the TurboGrafx. But really, it just seemed like the speedrun strategy seems to be getting to these bonus stages as quickly as possible. Like, that's obviously the strategy, is just trying to find some sequence of things that get you into the bonus stage very quickly. The 33-second one, which is the speedrun record on the Genesis, like, they practically start in the bonus stage. I don't know what they did.
That's awesome.
Is kind of weird. Did you watch the ending? I'm sure you've gotten it.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah, I have beaten it a few times, yeah.
Yeah, weird. Just weird.
Yeah. I think it's worth it, especially if you do one of the passwords that gets you pretty close there. But, you know, one thing I forgot to mention is the music. The soundtrack in this is crazy. It's very metal, and it repeats over and over again, but it just does not get old to me at all. And Oh yeah, I forgot to mention. So there's a lady in the middle, her head. So if you, she has like kind of a crown on with like two holes at the top. And if you get the ball in the holes, it lights up her head. And then there's kind of ports on the side of that same area where her head is. And each time you get the ball in one of those, after you light up her head, she slowly turns into a demon. Anyway, if you launch the ball without hitting anything else, and it goes right into her head, you get an instant 2 million points, which I don't think I've ever done, maybe once or twice. And I have had to play this game thousands of times. So, yeah. So, yeah, that's all I have to say about Devil's Crush. So what are you going to play next?
So I guess we probably aren't going to have another episode out until November. So I'm going to pick something that has both Halloween appeal and kind of fits our November theme. So I think November, we're going to be doing an episode about the GameCube launch. So I'm going to talk about quite a few games that are on GameCube, although not necessarily GameCube exclusives, because I want people to be able to play these on whatever system they own. So I'm going to go with Simpsons Hit and Run, which is a nearly, not quite, but nearly 20-year-old game.
Nice, cool. That'll be a fun one.
And if you do play it before November, it has a great Halloween stage.
Oh, nice. Good. Yeah, I'm going to try to play this. Well, I'll definitely play it before Halloween.
Yeah, it's like a Grand Theft Auto game that your kids can play.
Yeah. And I'm going to do Goonies 2 on the NES.
Yeah. So this is a game that's been on my backlog an extremely long time.
Yeah. It's not a Halloween game, but it kind of feels like one. And it definitely has a good soundtrack.
I've really, since the first time I saw this game, probably back in 87 or whatever, I thought, man, this looks great. I really want to play that. And I just have continuously not played it.
Well, I hope you're not disappointed. Well, all right. If any of our listeners plays Simpsons Hit and Run or Goonies 2, Friday the 13th, and especially my all-time favorite game, Devil's Crush, please email us. Email at retrogameclub.net. That is email at retrogameclub.net. Hit us up on Facebook, facebook.retrogameclub.net. We got Instagram, we got Twitter. It's all in our link tree, which is all in the show notes. And thank you, Zach, for doing all that stuff for us. And we got one email here, right? And then some
we got a
social
couple emails. No, we have more than one email.
Oh, nice.
Majors writes in, speculates that perhaps people in Croatia are listening because they want to master the Midwestern accent. And then I just talk about my love of Sega Pico, and he asks if I had any interest in the only in Japan successor system called the Bina. Is it a real thing? No, I have no interest in that. It's kind of a neat novelty. I was aware of it, but it came out quite a few years later. And of course, it's only, you know, Japanese games. And now the Pico became kind of like, I picked one up at a yard sale one day. It was really cheap. My kids really liked it. So then, whatever reason, one summer, I just kept finding Picos and Pico games at yard sales.
Strange.
And I ended up with two Picos. And then at one point I looked at like a list of like every Pico game ever made and realized I was only like two short of having a complete collection, or at least in the US. So then at Midwest Gaming Classic, I'm like, that's it. I'm just going to find the last two Pico games I don't have.
Nice. Hopefully they weren't ridiculously expensive or something.
No. Vendors at Midwest Gaming Classic, if they have Pico games, they don't want them. So that's fine. Really cool system, though. I mean, if you have young kids, Pico is really not a bad system.
Yeah.
And they also sent us some pictures of the Too Many Games Festival back on October 8th through 10th. So it's a little smaller room. It looks kind of like got kind of like a field house look going to it. And just a lot of different systems set up and arcade cabinets. And yeah, it looks like a good time.
Yeah.
And then Stanley wrote in to say, yes, it was him who told us about the Retro Game Collector app.
So, I love it.
Good thing we remembered that. And he said over the weekend, he's been playing his PlayStation Vita a ton. He played Uncharted Golden Abyss, God Wars, Future Past, and God Wars, Future Past. You can edit that if you want. And Jak and Dexter 1. And he also is playing the limited run games Night Trap on Sega CD over the weekend, and also Alien Crush. And he wanted to note that when he bought his Sega CD 4 years ago, the original battery from the 90s was still working in that as well. And anything else he has with the battery is long, long, long dead, except for the Sega CD.
Yeah. Have you played that Uncharted Golden Abyss?
That is the only Uncharted game I have not played, because when I got my Vita, I didn't realize how much I would like the Uncharted games.
Mm-hmm.
I got into Uncharted. Uncharted was really like a game of 2020 quarantine for me. Like, you can't really go anywhere. I happen to have the first four Uncharted games.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, you know what? I'll just start Uncharted 1 and maybe I'll like it. Maybe I won't, whatever. It was like the remaster for PlayStation 4. And man, did I instantly Uncharted became one of my top five game series. I really got into those games. I mean, they're short. Like, that's the only downside. They're short, but you're basically, you're paying $60. I mean, I paid less than that for these, but a new Uncharted game would be $60, and you essentially get, what, like a 20-hour movie out of it?
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's a lot cheaper than going to see a movie. So, whatever. Like, they can be short. They're good content. You know, it's a good, solid 20-hour game.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And Golden Abyss was actually the first one I played, just because I had a Vita before I had a PS3 or a PS4. Oh, is that right? I don't know if it's before I got a PS3. No, definitely not. But I played it a lot more. And I really enjoyed it. Now, people kind of dog on that one for not being as good as, it's console brothers, but I thought it was great on the Vita. I thought it looked good. I thought it played good. The story was fine. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Uncharted 3 is like by far the most bonkers of all the stories.
Yes.
Like, I still liked it, but I mean, that's a crazy story. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the stories have like one kind of supernatural element to them. 3 just goes way over the top with it. 2, I think, is probably my favorite. I'd say 2, 4, 1, 3 is my order.
I think that's pretty common. I think that order is pretty common.
Yeah, I mean, 4, like, the very ending of 4 is kind of boring, but up until the ending, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it kind of has the Lord of the Rings ending, where it's just like, they close all the doors except for one, pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, I definitely want this game. And you can just buy that. You can still just buy it on the Vita store. So,
yeah. Yeah.
There's nothing to prevent me from buying Uncharted Golden Abyss. I haven't checked eBay. I don't know if it's expensive on eBay. I'll probably look for it. Midwest Gaming Classic is like 2 weeks away. I'll probably look for it while I'm there.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jack and Dexter is a great game, too. I've never played God Wars, though.
Yeah. I haven't played that either. But, you know, every now and then I go on a big Vita kick, too, where I'll just play nothing but Vita games for a month.
Yeah, that's a good thing to do.
I do though, like PSP. I definitely went on a PSP kick recently too, where I played like Final Fantasy VII and all that other stuff on there. The Final Fantasy VII prequel, which I would argue might be better than Final Fantasy VII. Social media feedback. The Nostalgic likes Friday the 13th. It was the first game he put in to test if his NES was working again.
Nice.
As it does for repair work.
Cool.
He wanted to play it. He said, the speed run. Okay, what is it?
Two minutes and 53 seconds.
Yeah, you have to clean this up here because I'm. He said, there's an optimal starting position in Friday the 13th, which you get on average 1 out of 88 tries. So now, obviously, an emulator, you know, there's not really a random number generator in the NES. So it's obviously based on like a frame counter or something. Uh-huh. So. With an emulator, you, of course, could hit the right frame. But on actual NES, it's play a lot harder.
Yeah.
And PGH Guitar Guy also really, really loves Friday the 13th. Normally, nice. I don't call out Twitter handles, but I want to give these two a shout out because they are praising Friday the 13th, which is just an underrated game. And I guess Zach asked on social media for pictures of people's
collections.
You know, I did not reverse image search to see how many of these were fake, but the ones that people shared look really, really nice. You know, One of them is a lot of box systems, a lot of box Japanese systems, and a lot of box Japanese games.
And 64DD games in there, too.
Yeah. Yeah, one is like a combination, looks of like manga and NES and box NES and import games with a Robotron sign. That is nice.
Yeah.
Very, very nice. Some people still have their collections boxed up. Which I understand sometimes you got to do. One that's about the size of my game room. This last one, I think this was one Nate sent, with very much, much more neatly organized than my space, though.
Yeah, what game cabinet is that? It's hard to see.
Ooh, yeah. It could just be an Evercade, but I don't think it is.
And Nate has, it looks like he has the same problem I have, where controllers, it's a Starcade, yeah.
Yeah.
But when you have all your consoles sitting all nice in your TV cabinet, there's really no place to put the controllers. Like, and if you want to leave them plugged in, that doesn't look nice and tidy at all. So looks like
I have a laundry bin that's a Game Boy themed laundry bin.
Mm-hmm.
And I have inside it a series of backpacks that the controllers are in. Video game backpacks. So I just know, like, the Zelda backpack has the Nintendo controllers.
Nice. Yeah.
And it looks really neat, although it is a pain to take stuff out. And I got one of our social media feedbacks here, I got to give a quick apology here to listener Ivan, who I've done a podcast with before. So he works on the Games Tome podcast, which I was a guest on like forever ago. And I literally was just thinking about that episode. So it's a Portuguese retro gaming podcast. And they invited me on a while ago. And I was thinking about it when we talked about like having a bunch of listeners in Croatia, because it was interesting talking to retro game fans in Portugal, because the experience is just so different. Uh-huh. You know, they didn't have a lot of the systems, like systems that we talk about on this show, they just didn't have. And they have to like go to other European countries to get them, and like stores in Portugal, it's pretty scarce. So it's a totally different thing trying to collect retro games out there. But he found us through the PC Engine hashtag, which we must have used.
Just once. So yeah. This is the first time I've ever used that hashtag. I think we mentioned PC Engine last episode, maybe because of Devil's Crush, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But so that kind of leads me to a question is, how do our listeners find retro game podcasts? Like, shoot me some hashtag recommendations. Maybe we'll get some more listeners.
But I was looking at the episode of the podcast we did. We recorded it on YouTube, and we recorded it in 2015. And I am a whole lot less gray in 2015 than I am now. So I was really depressed going back to look at that. I apologize, Simon, because I did not reach out to him when I started this podcast to say, hey, come check this out. I reached out to many people, but there are also many I forgot.
Well, we're glad to have him.
Yes. Yeah, Portugal, you know, you said Croatia would be a great country to visit. Portugal seems like a beautiful country to visit as well.
Yeah, it really does. It really does.
I have to, hopefully, when we can start traveling again, there's a lot of, like, countries with coastlines I really, really want to visit.
Uh-huh. Yeah, same here. Well, cool. I think that wraps up this episode, right?
Yeah, I think so. So again, email at retrogameclub.net. I do not think we are going to have another episode before November. Mostly due to things being extremely busy, and your kids are definitely trick-or-treat age.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of Halloween activities. I got a lot going on too, so I suspect we probably won't record again until the first week of November. It's my guess.
Yeah, no, Halloween goes till like November 7th to me.
Yeah, well, because there's one of my favorite parts of Halloween, which is going to Target, who again is not a sponsor of the show, and other stores the day after Halloween to get half price tacky decorations. And if there's a candy you like that isn't maybe super popular, like I really like the Take 5 bar.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that bar?
Oh yeah.
It's got like a bunch of, it's like a factory accident candy bar.
Yes.
Whatever reason people don't like them. It's probably best if I don't buy like multiple bags of them the day after Halloween, but I usually end up buying them anyways.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of candies that you only see on Halloween, like sugar babies.
Oh yeah, I can't eat that, man. Too much to work.
No. Yeah. Yeah, you get lockjaw.
Yeah, yeah. If you've had like fillings, there's like a whole group or if you have a crown or something, there's just a whole group of Halloween candy that's out for the rest of your life.
Yeah, yeah. But cool. If, again, email at retrogameclub.net if you guys play our new games. What did we pick again? Goonies 2 and Simpsons Hit and Run?
Simpsons is that right? Hit and Run, which is much older than you think.
Nice. Well, cool. Well, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Happy Halloween.